Hello, and welcome to show number 2514 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
You reach a certain level of vision and, you know, you kind of get comfortable and you adapt and you adjust the way you do things. And all of a sudden, before you know it, it's changed again on you. So you kind of have to be really adaptable.
And today's story is about what can happen when your vision does change later in life.
We'll talk with Eric Manser about his experiences with blindness training programs, transitioning from using primarily magnification to screen readers, and finding the value in using non-visual techniques. Eric's journey offers insights into overcoming challenges and learning new skills. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Eric Manser.
I know that when I was contemplating the idea of getting into some sort of a training program, like it was something that I really wanted to kind of take a step back and, you know, assess what I hope to gain out of it. And though clearly, you know, what I kind of expected I might gain and what I ended up gaining were, you know, a little bit different. You know, I think just doing your best to kind of do your best self-assessment that you can is a good first step. And then taking a look at all the options. I mean, there are different programs and, you know, different training styles or approaches that emphasize, you know, different aspects of the vision loss experience. And so, you know, kind of doing your best to do a little research, kind of inform yourself about kind of the full spectrum of possibilities and, you know, knowing yourself and knowing, you know, what your goals and your preferences might be, like just really being thoughtful about what you hope to gain from it and then considering, you know, where you might go to receive that.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the Blind Institute of Technology, a global nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing accessibility and inclusion. BIT offers training programs and connects skilled professionals with disabilities to career opportunities. More information is at blindit.org.
And by
Biped AI, the manufacturer of NOAA, an all-in-one mobility vest. NOAA provides GPS navigation, detects obstacles, and describes surroundings using cameras and AI. Available through many distributors. More information is available at biped.ai.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Eric.
Well, today's guest has been with us on the show several times before, but today we have something very new and different to talk with him about. But before we do that, maybe Eric, you can tell people who you are and what you're up to these days.
Sure. Very delighted to be here. My name is Eric Manser. I live just outside of Boston, up in Massachusetts. I am 52 years old. I have a wife and our two beautiful daughters, and I currently work as a digital accessibility consultant at Harvard University and am very proud to be currently training for the Boston Marathon, which will be my 15th time running the Boston Marathon this coming April.
And we've talked to you previously about your experiences running the Boston Marathon, including once when you had a celebrity guide. That was kind of fun.
That was definitely one of the more memorable trips into the Boston Marathon finish line for me, for sure.
And today's story really relates to the state of your vision and how it's changed with time. Can you tell us what the state of your vision is these days and what it was a few years ago?
Certainly, yeah. Again, as I mentioned, I am 52 years old currently, and when I was five, we actually learned that I have a condition, retinitis pigmentosa, or RP. You know, even at that time, like I remember my vision being or feeling very quote unquote normal. Like I had a good amount of useful vision. I think the biggest thing that kind of tipped my parents off at that time that there might be an issue was the fact that I seemed to be struggling a little bit in poorly lit settings. One distinct memory was, you know, in an evening during the summertime, we lived close to a kind of a beach, a swimming area. And my family, my sister, and both parents, we were all walking home together and it was just getting, you know, dusk. And I was struggling to kind of keep up with the rest of the group. And so that's what kind of, you know, made them say, hey, there might be something going on here. So they brought me in. We figured out that RP was something that I had. I think there was a general knowledge within, you know, my mom's side of the family, which is the side of the family that has RP in it. And, you know, but not very much was known. So as, you know, time has gone on, we've learned that the type of RP that I have is what they call X-linked. So it's linked to the X chromosome. So females in my family can be carriers. However, boys are the ones that are generally afflicted with the condition itself. So, you know, it's a degenerative and, you know, progressive condition that eventually leads to blindness. So as I mentioned, I was diagnosed when I was 5 years old. And now at 52, I've got a, you know, small central field of vision remaining. You know, over time, my peripheral range has kind of closed in and closed in. And so now, you know, I've got almost, I describe it as if you were to look through like a drinking straw, and even the acuity or the quality of the image that I'm seeing in that small circle of vision is even a little obstructed. It's, you know, not a high quality image. It's, a little bit garbled, I guess, is probably the word. But yeah, it's, you know, just a progressive condition that eventually leads to blindness. And I'm what I consider to be at the towards the very tail end of my vision loss with it right now.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is the overall experience of going for blindness skills training as an adult and some of the things that Eric was surprised to learn there.
Well, Eric, as you described in the introduction, your vision deteriorated slowly over time as you grew older. And almost similarly, I had a large change in my vision just before going to graduate school. And, you know, this happens to people. Either as they get older, they might suddenly lose their sight or gradually lose it as they get older, or the situation might change, and they might want to acquire some more blindness skills or brush up on them a bit. And that's what we'll be talking about today. And so based on your vision changes, you decided to do something about it and acquire some of those skills. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in that and what led you to make that decision.
Yeah, for sure. It's been interesting just because, you know, as the vision loss has progressed, you know, it's something that makes you very adaptable because, you know, you reach a certain level of vision and, you know, you kind of get comfortable and you adapt and you adjust the way you do things, and all of a sudden before you know it, it's changed again on you. So you kind of have to be really adaptable. And add to that, you know, I have really taken to the benefits of technology. You know, the fact that I work in technology and accessibility, and you know, I pride myself on trying to maintain some level of tech savviness and, you know, kind of staying up to date with the latest and greatest of what's available that can help, you know, people experiencing vision loss from a technological perspective. And the fact that I'm, you know, someone who works full time in a technology role, I also had a little bit of anxiety about the fact that, you know, continued vision loss could affect my productivity and my able to be efficient and stay competitive and, you know, all of the things that you think about in a professional capacity. Like, you know, I want to be carrying my weight as part of a team in the workplace. And I want to be doing everything I can to stay, you know, to keep my skills current, but also not have the progressive disability that I'm experiencing start to affect my ability to kind of contribute equally as, you know, as part of the team.
So mostly you had been adapting along the way as your vision changed, and that was okay. But then eventually you must have reached a point where you said, gee, I have to make some bigger change and do something about it. And you found a service that would allow you to acquire some of the skills you were looking for.
Exactly. Yeah. To this point, you know, my experience with vision loss, you know, I've been what they call low vision, you know, someone with some vision, but, you know, not great or whatever. And so I've been getting by with things like magnification and the ability to kind of change the color or the, you know, the way things look on your screen. However, you know, continuing towards, you know, a state of complete blindness, there is a big transition that comes with that. Like the decision to ultimately move to using a screen reader full time, very much in my mind, that's almost like having to learn a new language. Like it's an entirely different way of interacting with technology and navigating things than what I had been used to. And so contemplating that and thinking about how to navigate that while still remaining employed and productive and active in a working role, like, you know, that was overwhelming. And so thankfully, at my job, you know, where I'm working at Harvard, like one of our directors had great familiarity with one of the training programs, incidentally, which is near you guys at the Colorado Center for the Blind. And the, you know, really innovative and it's actually a very immersive approach to skills training that they use there. And as I understood it, is some flexibility. I mean, oftentimes, you know, people that are, you know, experiencing vision loss or learning new skills to live with blindness, like many times people will go there for months at a time. However, you know, as a working professional, I wasn't in a position to really take extended period of time away from work. So they were able to be flexible and, you know, kind of tailor a training program that more specifically focused on the exact skills for my individual needs, like what I needed most, I thought.
What skills did you focus on? Was this part of your transition from going from magnification to using speech and braille?
Well, yeah, when consulting ahead of me actually going to the center, you know, they asked, you know, what I would consider to be my priority focus areas. And, you know, so I said, absolutely, technology is a main focus. I had dabbled in using the screen reader either on my phone or on my laptop. And, you know, it was the sort of thing where I had never fully kind of dove in and kind of just decided to start using it all the time. So, you know, and I've since heard that that's, you know, fairly common, like for people that still have some vision, you know, the tendency to kind of continue to use, you know, the vision you have as much as you can is not unusual. But, you know, starting to use the screen reader full time, the immersion in starting to do that was so helpful to me because it made it very clear very quickly that I can navigate this way. Like it also made me start to realize that the degree to which I'm struggling today to continue to see my, even though it's 300% magnified, you know, the strain that goes along with continuing to try and see what's on my screen, it's actually a relief, right? When I'm actually able to kind of navigate and be proficient in, you know, getting around the content on my screen, but also to be able to just listen and actually take in the same information just in a different way.
It's a different skill when you do that. And it's very easy to rely on the skills that you used to have. I remember when I was using magnification and it progressively became harder and harder and I'd get my nose closer and closer to the screen. And I resisted using a speaking screen reader because it was different. It was harder to learn. And oh, by the way, I could just look at the screen and just look a little closer. So it was hard to make the transition.
On the other hand, you continued to assume that you could see the screen longer than that was actually true. And I remember walking into your office one day and somebody had moved the monitor. And there was Pete sitting there with his nose up against where the monitor used to be, but was no longer. trying as hard as he could to read what was on the screen. And I just said, you know, Pete, I think you've reached the point where you can turn the screen off, because it wasn't even there.
Like, for me, I definitely rounded a corner when I had the realization that, like, it's a relief, like the ability to kind of reflect and say, it is so much easier to listen to what's being shared rather than continuing to just strain. Like you said, like, you know, I feel like I have nose prints on my screen at times because of how much, you know, I had to kind of lean in. And I mean, it feels like you're doing cartwheels, you know, and when it's so easy to just sit back and just let the spoken word kind of flow over you, it makes such a difference.
Right, right. It's nice to know for people that there are resources and organizations that can provide this type of training that you went through and also I went through just before graduate school. But as you mentioned, this was somewhat customized to you, as it was to me, because people come into these programs with all levels of abilities, disabilities, and backgrounds and needs for when they get out the other end.
For sure. Yeah, it was interesting because when I arrived at the center and, you know, I definitely had a sense that I would be on the older end of students. Like, you know, many of the typical students, as I understood it, were, you know, probably in their 20s or 30s. And then, you know, me being in my 50s, I felt like I might be on the upper end of kind of the age spectrum. And when I got there, to your point, Pete, like, you know, people were from all different backgrounds, all different walks of life. But yeah, I mean, the fact that my training plan was considerably modified. I mean, I ultimately ended up in a 6-week program, which is, you know, dramatically shorter than what their usual training schedule would be for someone. It definitely made me want to optimize my time there, probably. Like, you know, I wanted to make sure I got as much out of those 6 weeks as I possibly could. So I was highly motivated to kind of acquire a lot of these skills. And as I mentioned, like, we had a targeted, you know, set of things that we wanted to focus on, like technology. I mean, for me, travel was another, like the cane travel. You know, it had been since I was declared legally blind in the state of Massachusetts, which was 2007, since I had any cane skills training, like, you know, the navigating with the white cane. And so, you know, I was eager for that kind of part of their training, like to update, you know, my navigational skills. And, you know, I came to realize that even the cane I had been using was like a, you know, a lightweight fiberglass, like telescoping cane. And they really kind of strongly encouraged me to try like a rigid, like a straight cane, and one that actually was tall enough for me. You know, I'm 6'2" and like I had a cane that kind of came up to my mid chest. But when I got there and they handed me my non-collapsing straight cane, it actually came all the way up to my nose. So it was much longer than the cane I had been using. But again, another example of like during my time there, I gained such an appreciation for a lot of the benefits of this type of cane, because having a rigid cane like gives you so much more feedback in terms of as you're scanning the road or the, you know, the ground in front of you, like, you know, you're able to kind of tune in and feel the texture or the gradient of what's ahead so much better. And having a longer cane gives you more notice. Like, you are able to detect obstacles ahead of you with much more notice than kind of with the short cane I had been using, which, oh, by the way, could also collapse if you hit an obstacle in the wrong way.
I've had canes like that, those collapsible ones. They seem nice at first. They fold up nice and small. They're light. But boy, you hit something and they just go away when they collapse. And all of a sudden, there's no feedback.
You know, these were the kind of areas that I had said I'd like to focus on during my time there. But I give a lot of credit to the staff at the center because, like, in their wisdom and their expertise, I mean, you know, they agreed to the things I was hoping to focus on. And certainly we included a lot of that in the circulation of, you know, of my program when I was there. But they also did kind of lean in a little bit and make sure that I had kind of the full exposure to the full program. So honestly, like, things I didn't even expect to really want or need, like, I came away with, you know, some newly acquired skills, like, you know, things like cooking. Like, you know, cooking safely and predictably. Like every time I've ever tried to cook as I've been losing my vision, like there's never any consistency. Like, you know, like I used to struggle so much with like frying an egg, something as simple as frying an egg, and like it never came out the same way twice. Right. And so, you know, the fact that they were able to kind of break this down in a non-visual way into steps that are repeatable and predictable and safe, like it made it an actual activity that I really enjoy doing now, which I never expected going in. And, you know, I can fry an egg now, you know, with reliable results. Right. And so, you know, that was kind of eye opening. And then, you know, the fact that I went there, I never thought I'd want to learn Braille. But, you know, during my time there, they, you know, kind of gave me that exposure. They opened me up to kind of the introductory Braille lessons. And, you know, since coming away, like I've continued on in my like independent study of Braille, just because like I'm so taken with, you know, having this new skill. And literally like the suit, like as soon as I started back at work after my short term leave for this training, like the next time I had to go to campus and, you know, go into our office building at Harvard, like I got in the elevator. And to this point, I had always kind of remembered like where the button, like I need, you know, the fifth floor. And I know exactly where that button is positioned in the stack of buttons in that elevator. But almost by accident, the very next time I got in that elevator, like my fingers almost accidentally brushed across the Braille. And I was like, wait a second, I know this now. And like really immediately was able to identify where five was without kind of feeling, you know, within the stack of buttons, like just by the positional location of it. You know, it was really kind of an exciting experience to have like right off the training.
Oh, that's really nice, because you had gone into this program because of the big changes in your eyesight, and you had some specific goals that you wanted to attain, but it sounds like you came out of it with much more than you expected to in terms of the skills learned and confidence learned in doing other things like cooking an egg.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I continue to be surprised by the degree to which, you know, it has enriched my life in ways more than I ever expected.
Well, I'm glad that it sounds like you benefited a great deal from it, and it turned out to be such a positive experience. Kudos to you for actually signing up for the program and going through it.
Yeah, I'm eternally grateful for the recommendation that our director at work and certainly my manager. The fact that I was able to kind of step away and you know, take a short-term leave and support, I continue to receive from family and colleagues. I mean, it's just been tremendous. And, you know, it's really what made it possible. And again, just such a blessing, I think.
I'm really impressed. You know, you've, like you said, you're 52. So you've been on your own as an adult for 30 years. You've held down several different jobs, different places. In order to do that, you must have already had pretty good blindness skills. And the fact that, you know, you went for training for some fairly short number of weeks and came back and said, wow, I learned this and this and this and improved all these facets. I'm really impressed that you could see that big of a change.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's nice to hear, and you're kind, but like, I feel like also, you know, the biggest thing I feel like I took away from the experience was just increased comfort with the non-visual approach. Like I had been leaning so heavily on my old visual habits, right? And so the immersion piece of it is what really got me to a new level and kind of comfort with the non-visual approach. Like I can, in more situations now, I can lead with the non-visual approach. Whereas, you know, it used to be a panic. Like if I was, I'll use an example. Like if I was out on a bright sunny day and like my iPhone magnification wasn't doing anything for me, like I didn't have the skill at that time to like flip without even thinking over to VoiceOver and just without even hesitation, like continue on in my productive use of the phone, right? Like now if I'm out and I get stuck, like it used to really throw me for a loop, but now I can just, okay, turn on VoiceOver and I just keep moving about my day like nothing ever happened. So it's like, you know, the non-visual approach to things is much more familiar and comfortable for me now.
And hopefully when you get to a point where you need to rely on the non-visual more and more often, you'll be more and more comfortable with it.
Absolutely. I think that's what I feel like I've now gotten a little bit of a jump on is, you know, when that day does come, you know, it's not going to be such a jarring or drastic change for me. It feels like it'll be a little more natural.
Yeah. And less to be scared of.
Yeah, exactly.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Now for this week's final item, how to get blindness skills training and how to contact Eric Manser.
Well, Eric, if people had questions for you about your experience or where to find organizations like this that could help them, how can they contact you or find out about these things?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd welcome anyone reaching out. I can be found on LinkedIn, and my name, Eric Manser, it's a little bit different spelling for Eric. It's E-R-I-C-H, and Manser is M-A-N-S-E-R. Feel free to connect there. Or on my email, you can reach me at Manser Like Dancer, M-A-N-S-E-R-L-I-K-E-D-A-N-C-E-R, manserlikedancer@gmail.com is my email. And again, feel free to reach out at any time.
And where do people find organizations and resources that can give them this type of training that you and I went through?
You know, where I had such a positive experience was at the Colorado Center for the Blind, and their website is cocenter.org. And I'm sure they have additional information on their training programs and options there. Some of the national organizations, whether it's National Federation of the Blind or American Council for the Blind, I think they list a lot of the resources and available trainings as well.
And who generally pays for these programs? Are these administered through social services or vocational rehab services, or do you have to pay for it yourself?
I think it varies a little bit depending on your circumstances. In my case, where I had, you know, taken a short-term leave from work, and I am kind of registered with the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, like I did work through the state agency, and you know, I was able to receive, you know, the funding support through my rehabilitative counselor at Mass Commission.
But I guess the first place to look for people is some of their state vocational rehab services.
I would suggest that, yeah.
And of course, you can find all of that contact information in the show notes associated with this episode, which is episode 2514. And we'll also have links to 5 other episodes in which we talk with Eric if you're interested in hearing more.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about going to the movies. We'll talk with Alex Howard and Lee Pugsley, co-hosts of the Dark Room podcast, about what motivated them to start the podcast, their experiences at movie theaters, challenges they've had with some audio description services, and improving theater accessibility.
So grab yourself a bag of popcorn, and we hope to catch you next week at the movies.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.